Okay, Ellen, just, sorry, wait, just, what was your name again?
Yeah,
Ellen.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, got it. Let me try and get it. Okay, so we, last week we'd finished our discussions of Yitzchak and Rivka and decided to move on to the next big story, which is the stealing of the brachot. Okay, so the stealing of the brachot story opens up a lot of the following stories from here till the end of Bereishis. This is really a turning point in many ways, but it's also a very, in many ways, cryptic story or difficult to understand story for many reasons. And when we look at the story, right, the way we all sort of learn the story, the first time we hear it is that Yitzchak was mistaken. Yitzchak meant to give the bracha to Esav. He wanted Esav to be the heir to the legacy of Avram. And Rivka and Yaakov realized that this was a mistake, and so they had to trick Yitzchak into giving the bracha to Yaakov. And you know, that's sort of the classic story that, you know, the first time we see it, that's how we think about it. But that story raises a lot of questions, right? Which is, first of all, right, how exactly did Yitzchak, if in fact Esav is as evil as we think he is, then how did Yitzchak not notice? And even if he didn't notice, why is it that Rivka had to resort to the subterfuge? Why didn't she just tell him what was going on? And even if, let's say, for whatever reason, Yitzchak was wrong, and Rivka couldn't communicate it with Yitzchak, does that mean that this was the best way of going about it, right? Is there, even if it was clear that Yaakov had to get the bracha, did it have to be with this type of deceit? You know, could it have been done better? And how would we even prove that, right? Is there any hint in the text, either here, in the actual stealing of the brachot story, in the psukim leading up to it, or the psukim afterwards, the parshiot afterwards, that would indicate, right, who was right, right? What hints would we be looking for? So what I want to do is really go through the different possibilities, and then, you know, maybe next week we'll, you know, take one of the directions and sort of flesh it out. But as you see right here, I divided into, you know, right, into sections. The first possibility, what we're going to look at, and we're going to explore the evidence, is, you know, to bolster our, you know, our sort of that first reading that we have, which is that Yitzchak was mistaken, Rivka and Yaakov, there are sources over here, that Yaakov, Rivka and Yaakov were correct. Then we're going to explore some of the evidence to say that maybe they were right insofar as, you know, Esav shouldn't have gotten the bracha, but they still did something wrong, and we'll see the evidence that maybe the Torah does censure them. Then we'll look at the possibility that maybe we misunderstood Yitzchak, maybe Yitzchak really wasn't doing what we thought he was doing. And then the fourth, the fourth section will build off of that. Okay, so what I want to do is again try to explore this story and all the evidence in the different directions. Okay, so we all know the basic story, right? Yitzchak wants to bless Esav, and Rivka says this can't be. So when Esav is out getting the food for Yitzchak, she cooks food for Rivka cooks food for Yitzchak, gives it to Yaakov, convinces him to trick his father, dresses him in his clothes so that he will feel like Esav to his blind father. He tricks him. Yitzchak is clearly a little bit confused, right? And he says the famous line, "Hayadayim yidei Esav, akol kol Yaakov hayadayim yidei Esav." And then Esav comes in, angry. He realizes what had happened. He cries. Yitzchak gives him a bracha of sorts. Then Rivka, you know, tells Yaakov to flee to her brother's house to get married. And that's, you know, that's the basic facts of the story. So the first, you know, possibility that we, you know, that Yitzchak was mistaken and that Rivka and Yaakov were correct. And there is, in fact, a lot of evidence for that, right? It's not for naught that we sort of start with that assumption. The first is, you know, if you look right at the beginning of the Parsha, right, we have when Yaakov and Esav are being born, And so we have, this is the first source, Vayetar Yitzchak la Hashem lenochri ishto ki akarahi, Vayetar lo Hashem vatar Rivka ishto. So they're barren, so Yitzchak and Rivka daven, and then Rivka becomes pregnant. Vayitritzu abanim bekirba, and the children are very active in her stomach. Vatomer imkein lamazah anochi, and she says, if this is going on, whatever that means, why am I, right? Why am I in existence? Vatelech ledrosh at Hashem. So she goes to seek God. Vayomer Hashem la, and God conveys to her through this person, Shnei goyim bevitnech, you have two nations in your stomach, Ushnei umim mimeayich yiparedu, and two nations will come forth from you, laom milom yamatz virav yavod sa'ir, and the might shall pass from one to the other, and the elder shall serve the younger. So we open up the beginning of the Yaakov and Esav story, and we know, though for some reason Yitzchak seems not to know, that God has told Rivka that they're going to be two kids. And even though the normal rules of primogeniture would determine that Esav, who was the Bechor, should get the legacy, we already know before they're born that that's not the case. So the first piece of evidence that we have, literally from the beginning of their life, is that the end game is that Yaakov gets the bracha. Now that seems to be what the Psukim are opening up with. Now, the question, though, becomes, right, is, okay, but the Psukim seem to imply that Yitzchak doesn't know about this, because if he knows about it, then why is he giving a bracha to Esav? And why is Rivka not telling him, right? There's a lack of communication here. What is it? Why is she hiding it? Why are the Psukim emphasizing that she knows, but Yitzchak seemingly doesn't? So the Ramban suggests, and two, V'nir'eh, shelo hegida lo Rivka me'olam ha'nevuah, asher amar Hashem la v'rav yavod se'ir. It seems from the story that Yitzchak doesn't know, that Rivka never told Yaakov what happened. Yitzchak what happened. Ki eichaya Yitzchak overet pi Hashem v'hi lo titzlach. Because otherwise, when Yitzchak is trying to bless Esav, he's violating the will of God, and he knows he's not going to succeed. V'ine, mitchila lo hegida lo derech musar tzniut. So he suggests that she didn't tell him out of modesty. Why? Ki vatelech ledrot et Hashem, shalcha b'lo reshut Yitzchak. She, you know, there was something weird about the whole thing, right? She had gone to this man of God without telling Yitzchak. The whole story started a little bit strange, right? She had gone by herself, and if she was really bothered, she thought something was wrong, so why didn't she tell Yitzchak? But she didn't, and she did this around, you know, behind his back, which maybe that was a mistake, because, you know, if there's something really wrong and she's going to, you know, in secret, going to see some prophet, you know, she might want to tell Yitzchak. But once she didn't, right, she didn't want to, right, now she has a problem, she doesn't tell Yitzchak, Oshamra, eich ein anochi tzricha lagid. Alternatively, it wasn't that, you know, at this point she didn't want to tell him after she'd already gone without you know, telling him of that initial meeting. Maybe she said, ein ani tzricha lagid divua l'navi, ki ugadol min amagidli. Or maybe there was just a total miscommunication that she assumed Yitzchak himself is a prophet. So she was like, look, I don't want to ask him what's going on because I'm scared of what it'll be. So I'll ask a different prophet. But Yitzchak, once she finds out that all is good, then she maybe thinks that, oh, well, maybe Yitzchak already knows. So I don't have to tell him. She didn't realize that God had conveyed this to her. And there was just a game of, you know, she thought Yitzchak knew and Yitzchak didn't know. So there was just miscommunication. And now, once she, you know, heard from a different prophet, she didn't want to tell Yitzchak, oh, I heard from somebody else. And then he adds another possibility, that maybe she was worried that even if this is the case, Yitzchak will feel bad. He won't want to bless Yaakov, because he doesn't want to take away the bracha from Esav. So maybe she thought that if she told Yitzchak, he just wouldn't do anything. He would just, you know, okay, God has determined it, so let him determine it. And I just won't give anybody a bracha and let God take care of it. He wants to mess with my children's destinies. He can do that, but don't make me be the bad guy, right? So, you know, a combination of she'd made a mistake and did it behind his back. The first place, or she assumed she knew that he knew already, or she didn't want him to, you know, to just sort of give up and say, leave it in the hands of God, because I don't want to be responsible for blessing Esav instead of Yitzchak. And she knew that, right, and even if he did bless, it wouldn't be, right, she wanted the blessing to be with a full heart, and she felt that if, you know, she was going to force his hand through a prophecy, he would feel bad, and it wouldn't be with you know, he wouldn't be emotionally invested in it. Oh, ha'im sibot mein Hashem kadesh berech Yaakov, or maybe God had decreed it, maybe, you know, God had decreed that this is how it had to be, that there had to be this, you know, the bracha in this way. Right, or maybe this is what God wanted. So the Ramban raises a bunch of possibilities, but, you know, what they open the possibility of clearly is that, you know, the way we understood the story is basically right, right? And he tries to, you know, tie up some of the loose ends. Why was it that Yitzchak didn't know either? She assumed he did, and then she saw that he was blessing Esau. Now it's too late. It's, oh, you know, 20 years ago, I had a nevuah from this, you know, this man of God that I didn't tell you about. Like, it was just too late. But, you know, nothing nefarious going on. It was just, this was what happened, and now, what can you do? And at the end, he even opens the possibility that maybe, yeah, and maybe for some reason God had arranged it, he wanted it to happen this way, with this all this confusion through the subterfuge. So, you know, so that, you know, points in this direction. That maybe, you know, what we think is, we've always thought is right, that Yitzchak made a mistake, Rivka and Yaakov were correct, they weren't really blameworthy, there was a little bit of confusion, God wanted it that way. That's great. Right, and there's more evidence to it. So you look in 3. So Yitzchak, the Pesukim describing Yitzchak at this moment say he was old and his eyes had become weak. So he called to his son, to Esav, and said, to bless him. And he said, here I am. And Rashi says, why was he blind? So Rashi has a few possibilities, but his last possibility is Davar Acher Kedei Sheyitol Yaakov Et HaBechorot. God himself had arranged that Yitzchak would be blind in order for this trickery to work, right, so that Yaakov could take the brachot. So again, this pushes strongly in the direction that for whatever reason, and that's, you know, something we might have to take up, is why, what is that reason? Why would God specifically want it to happen through trickery? But for whatever reason, God wanted it to happen this way. And if you look in Source 5, we actually can support this view from a parallel story. Right, the Pesukim we just saw described that Yitzchak was blind. So Rashi claims that that tells us that God really wanted him to be tricked. But there's another hint in the Pasuk, not that God wanted him to be tricked, but that Yitzchak was in the wrong. And that's the, right, Vatechena Einav Meraot, this notion that he was blind, really has two meanings, right? One is the physical blindness, but what else can blindness mean? And this is true in English, and this is true in Hebrew, and this is true in any language, right? Which is, right? He was blind to what was going on. He didn't understand what was going on. And in fact, right? We have in Shmuel, in Source 5, we have a parallel story where that's in fact how the words are used. So in Sefer Shmuel, one of the first stories that we have, and how we're introduced to Shmuel. Right, Shmuel becomes the leader of Klal Yisrael. He takes over for Eli. Why aren't Eli's children taking over for Eli? Because
shame.
Right, because they are sinning, and whatever exactly they're doing, they're terrible in the Beit HaMikdash. So the first story that we hear about Shmuel is this moment of transfer of power from Eli to Shmuel, where Shmuel becomes a Navi. Right. Shmuel's first nevuah from God is, just so you know, I want you to convey this to Eli, that his sons are not going to take his place because they're sinners. But look how the Pesukim describe it. So if you look in 5, Vayhi bayomahu. So that day, the Eli shochev bimkomo, Eli was in his, he was lying down in his bedroom, the einav hechelu chehot, and his eyes were weak. Right, this is the same words we have by Yitzchak. Vatichena einav, right, the same language. Lo yuchal lirot. He can't see. Right. So we have by Yitzchak vatichena einav miraot, and here we have veino hechilu chehot lo yuchal lirot. Vayomer Hashem el Shmuel. So now Shmuel gets his nevuah, and we learn that Eli, it seems to be, was not just blind, was not becoming blind, but he was also blind to what his children were doing. What we think Yitzchak was about Esav. So here's the story. By Yomar Hashem al Shmuel, Hashem said to Shmuel, Hine Anochi Oseh Davar B'Yisrael, Asher Kol Shamot Titzilena Shteyos. Now, I'm going to do something in Israel that anyone who hears it, his ears are going to be burned. By Yomahu Akimet El Eli, Et Kol Asher Dibarti El Beito, Achel V'Chalei, and I'm going to fulfill all that I promised that I was going to do to the house of Eli. V'higad Tilo, and I tell him, Ki Shofet Ani Et Beito Ad Olam. I'm going to judge them negatively forever. There's that word again, in the sin that he, right, he knew what they were doing and he remained blind to it. And therefore I swear that about the house of Eli, im yitkaper avon beit Eli, right, this is right. It's a negative, but that they will never be atoned for. Bezevach u'mincha ad olam. Right, no matter how many karbanot they bring. Vayishgav Shmuel ad aboker, and Shmuel goes back to his room until morning. Vayiftach al daltot be Hashem and opens the Beit Hamikdash. Shmuel yarei ma'agidet amarei al Eli. Doesn't want to tell the vision to Eli. Vaykra Eli at Shmuel. So Eli calls to Shmuel. Vayomer Shmuel bini. Vayomer hineini. Right, don't hold back what God told you, and you know horrible things will happen if you do. So he tells him, and Eli says, God should do what's right. And here we have another story where someone, his children are not going in his way. He's already been told they're not going in his way, but he's blind to it. And the Pesukim describe it in the exact same way. Vatechena einav meraot, that he doesn't see what they're doing, and God gets angry, so God arranges that someone else becomes the chosen one instead of his children, and becomes Shmuel. So if you compare the stories of Yitzchak to the stories of Eli, again, we get further support that Yitzchak is in the wrong, right? He's not just blind physically, but he's blind to what Esav is doing, right? Because of his love for him, or whatever understandable reasons. But at the end of the day, he misunderstands the situation, and something has to be done about it. In Bracious Rabbah, they make this connection, but in the opposite way. And they actually say that the reason that Yitzchak became blind was because he justified the actions of Esav. And this is source 6. Sachak al yidei shehitzdik et harasha ki hu einav. That this was a punishment because he had been actively blind to Esav's actions his whole life, so God blinded him. Vayhi kizaken Yitzchak v'gomer. So again, the Midrash ties this in, this notion that Yitzchak was blind to Esav's actions, and that was what justified this whole situation. And we have evidence in the Psukim that he knew that Esav was sinning, right? It's not just the Midrashim. If you look in source 7, Vayhi Esav ben arbim shana veikach ishad yehudit bat beiri achiti vet basmat bat elon achiti vetihena morat ruach li Yitzchak ulirivka. We know that Esav had married these sinful women, and that here it says explicitly that both Yitzchak and Rivka were upset about it, right? So Yitzchak was clearly at some level aware, and despite that, was willing to bless Esav. And right in Pasuk Chet, we have when Rivka entreats Yitzchak to encourage Yaakov to leave. She says, "Vatamar Rivka el Yitzchak, katzti b'chayai mipnei benot chet. I hate my life because of these daughters of chet, these wives of Esav. Im lokech Yaakov isham benot chet kaelim benot aret lama li chayim. And if Yaakov takes the same type of wives, then why should I even live?" Right? And the following psukim are Yitzchak blessing Yaakov on his trip. So it's clear that at some level, Esav's actions were known to his father. He had some idea that, right, Esav was married to the wrong type of person, that Yaakov wasn't that type of personality. And despite that, he wants to bless Esav. So possibility one, for which there's a lot of evidence, is that in fact, right, Rivka and Yaakov were in the right. Here, the source is over here. That Rivka and Yaakov were in the right, Yitzchak was wrong, he had blinded himself to Esav's actions, whatever, because of the love of a father, all types of understandable reasons, but in the end of the day, through a series of miscommunications and willful blindness, Yitzchak didn't fully understand or wasn't willing to act on the situation, so Rivka and Yaakov had no choice but to be deceitful, And that's the right thing to do, right? That's possibility one. But there's a whole bunch of evidence that that's not the end of the story, right? So possibility two is that, right, it's hard to deny that that Yaakov was supposed to get the bracha, right? We have this opening nevuah that starts the story. So that might be clear. But that doesn't mean that the way they did it are right. And there's a lot of evidence that it's not. So now if we continue, right, and look at some of the psukim. These are from the bracha story, right? You can open up the chumash and look at some of it. But I put the main pasuk here. Right after the stealing of the bracha, Esav comes in and Yitzchak is talking to him, and Yitzchak describes what happens. And he says, "Vayomer," and he says, "Ba'achicha b'mirma." Your brother came with deceit, right? So Yitzchak is weighing in on it, right? Now, even post facto, he weighs in. He says, "There was deceit." Vayikach birchatecha. And then, after that, we have another hint, which is that Esav cries, right? That the very fact that he cries is not enough to be proof that what Yaakov did is wrong. But if you look at the psukim inside, and I think this was an interesting point. I think it was an article by Bracha Elitzur. Or that she notes, if you're just sensitive to how the psukim build up the psukim up to the cry, so where does it come? Here. So right in pasuk, starting in pasuk, chaf. And so she just notes that if you follow sort of the pathos of the psukim, right? Just sort of the feeling you get when you read the psukim in order. Vayomer Yitzchak b'no. Yitzchak turns to his son. Mazeh miharta limtso b'ni. How do you get back so fast? Right. We start with already an accusation. Right. There's something wrong. Vayomer kikra Hashem elokecha l'fanayna. God made it happen. Vayomer Yitzchak al Yaakov kishana. Right. He still doubts him. Amushecha b'ni. I need to feel you. Something's wrong. Atazeh b'ni Yitzavim lo. Are you really Esav? So he comes in touch with Vayomer, and he says something's still wrong. Kol Yaakov, Vayadami Deisav, Viloikiro, and he didn't recognize him. Kiyu Yadav Kideisav Achiv Zirot Vayivarchiv. So he blesses him, but there's something wrong. Vayomer, and then he says again, even after the bracha, he's still unsure. Vayomer Atazeh Bnei Esav, are you really Esav? Vayomer Ani said I am. Vayomer Agishali Veochlam Mitzed Bnei. Okay, so bring the food. Lemantiv Erecha Nafshi Vayigeshlo Vayochal Vayivelo Yain Vayesh. We gave it to him. Vayomer Lav Yitzchak Aviv Gishanash Kali Bnei. Come and kiss me. Right, he keeps coming back. He's still not sure. Vayigash Vayishaglo Vayirach and Reich Begadav Merechay. And he smelled the smell of his clothes and he blessed him. Vayomer Rei Reich Bnei Kireach Sadeh Shebrecho Hashem. And then he gives him the whole brachas. And then if you skip down to Lamed, then when Yitzchak finishes, Yaakov is just leaving. Right, it's building up the suspense. Right, it's making you feel like Yaakov is deceitful. Right, it's like his father three times isn't sure, and then. Right, it's the guilty scene. Right, it's not just the way the psukim describe it is. Right, Esav is coming and he like runs out and hides behind the curtain. Right, it's making you feel like Yaakov feels like something is wrong. Vayazgam umatamim, and Esav had also made food. Right, it's making you sympathize with Esav. He'd also gone out of his way and he'd done it. Vayavei laaviv, he brought the food to his father. Vayomer laaviv, and he said to his father, Yakum aviv, erchal mitzed bini, bavur tevarchan nevshecha. Vayomer lo Yitzchak miata, and he said, wait, what's going on? Who are you? Vayomer ani ben chavercha Esav, I am your son Esav. Vayacherad Yitzchak charadagdala, and Yitzchak shakes in terror. Ad meod. Vayomer miifo hu atzatzaid. Who was this person who hunted? Vayaveli vauchel mikol biterem tavo barachehu gam baruchia. Who was that person who came? And kishmo Esav devrei aviv vayitzak tzakagdala. That moment he screams a terrible scream. Marad meod. It's extremely bitter. Vayomer aviv barcheni gamani aviv. Please bless me. Vayomer ba'achicha bimirma vayikach berchatech. And he said, your brother came in deceit and took your bracha, And Esau says, "Vayomer achi karashmo Yaakov." Is this why he was called Yaakov? Vayakveni zefamayim, because he tricked me twice. At becharati lakach vinei atal lakach berchati. Vayomer alo atzal tali bracha. Haven't you left me anything? Right, it's making you sympathize with Esau. Right, over and over, he also went through it, and he's crying, and he says, "Did you leave nothing?" And he's done it to me twice. Vayan Yitzchak, and Yitzchak said, "Vayomer leisav hengvir samtiv lach." I've made him a your master, but kolachav natati lo lavadim, v'dagan v'tirosh machtiv. I gave him wealth. I gave him power. L'chayif omaseh b'ni. What can I do, my son? Right, and the just the language, right, is making you sympathize with Esau. Vayom ra'isav el aviv abracha chadilcha. Don't you have anything? Avi, my father, barachin gamani, bless me. Gamani avi, bless me, my father. Vayisai lov kalov ayek, and he cried. Right, so Rachel Yitzur points out, it's not just one psukim he cried. Like, you read the psukim, and there's an active attempt to make Yaakov look like he did something wrong, right? He's caught in the moment guilty, and Yitzchak is always questioning him. And Esav is, the psukim want you to sympathize with Esav. And the Midrashim actually pick up on this in very, very sort of, you know, in very scary ways. And in, if you look in 10, for example, this is Bracious Rabbah. It says, "Kishama Esav v'divrei aviv v'yitzak tzaka gdola mara." When Esav heard the cry, and he cried this terrible scream, "Amar Rabbi Chanina, kol mi she'omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, vatran hu, yitvadrun me'avai." Anyone who thinks and says that God forgives sin, right, his righteousness will be relinquished, right? And if you think that God gives up on it, right, your reward will be given up on. And now he brings a proof. Zaka achad hizik Yaakov leisav. Yaakov caused Esav to scream once. Ve'echan nifralo. And where was the punishment? Bishushan habira. Right, Purim, right, which is Amalek, which is the descendant of Esav. Shneimar vaYisak zakag dolamara. That's why the Jews had to scream a bitter cry, because Yaakov made Esav cry. So this midrash clearly picks up on the pathos of the psukim and says, wait a second, right? There's something wrong, right? Esav is someone you should sympathize with, and the fact that Yaakov tricked him in this way. Maybe he was supposed to get the bracha, but he clearly didn't give Esav enough credit, and it comes back to hurt the Jewish people. You caused him to cry, he will cause you to cry. So the Midrash, by tying in the crying of the Jews in Shushan, clearly is, right, taking a different perspective. Yaakov and Rivka were not totally right. The means were problematic. In perhaps what is the best proof for this direction, for this perspective, is in source 11. And this is, you know, perhaps the most damning psukim towards Yaakov in the entire Chumash. So after the Lavan story, right? If we look at the Lavan story, right, and we're looking now for evidence that Yaakov might have done something wrong. So what could we look at the Lavan story and say, right? The Midrash said that Yaakov was punished in the time of Purim. But if we just looked at the psukim, where would we, right, just looking at the psukim, think that maybe Yaakov got his just desserts? At the Lavan story, right? You deceived your father, and now you're going to be deceived. The psukim make it sound exactly like that in a very harsh way, right? So the next two psukim, this is the end of that story. Vahi vaboker, it's in the morning. Vinehi leya. Behold, it was Leah. Vayomra Lavan, Maso Tasitali. And he said to Lavan, what do you do? Halo brachelavatimach. Velama rimitani. Why did you deceive me? Right? That word, right? Same shoresh. And Lavan says something that, if we listen carefully, sounds really bad. Vayomra Lavan, what do you mean? Lo yasachem komino. We don't do this to what? Latedat si'ira lifne bechira, to put the younger before the older. Implying, who did that? Right? Why did you deceive me? Because, well, we don't do it, but somebody did. Right? You did. Right? You put the younger before the older. So don't tell me I deceived you. You are deceptive, and I'm just turning the tables on you. You took away the rights of the firstborn. I'm giving it back. Right? You almost hear, not just, you were deceitful. You were deceitful in this way. You put the, right, you put the younger before the older, so I'm going to fix that. Right? And the Midrash picks up on that. So if you look in source 12, it says Vayehav Yaakov, Vayomer Yaakov Elavan Hava v'chulei, Vahiber, it tells the story. So kol ha'layla hayam shameshima savarshi Rachel. All night he thought that she was Rachel. And kevan shamad baboker v'nehi Leah. So he got up in the morning, and turns out she was Leah. Amarla. So Yaakov said to Leah, Barteg de Rama, the daughter of a deceptive one. Lama remita oti. Why did you deceive me? Amra lo. And so she said to him, Va'ad lo ramit ba'avich. Bavicha, you didn't deceive your father? Kishayah omer lecha ha'ataze b'ni Esav. When he said to you, are you Esav? Ayita omer anochi Esav b'chorecha. And you said, I am Esav, your firstborn. Va'at omer lama rimitani. And you have the chutzpah to say, why did I deceive you? Avicha lo amar bo achicha b'mirma ve'kach berchatecha. Isn't that what your father said about you? That you came in deceit to steal the bracha? And the Midrash is picking up on this, on exactly this implication in the pasuk that wait a second, you don't have the right to claim that I deceived you. You deceived your father in exactly the same way. And at some level, it sounds like Yaakov himself realizes this, because if we look at the beginning of this week's parsha and parshas Vayishlach, so now, after many years, Yaakov finally gets a chance to meet up with Esav again. And so we know the story, right? He's scared for his life. Esav is coming with 400 men. So he sends him gifts, and he davens, and he arranges his family into war camps, and he's ready for everything, So that's fine. That we understand. But when he actually meets him, he describes his gift with an interesting word. He doesn't say, take the normal word, which would be minchati, my offering to you, or some word like that. He says, Pasuk Yud Aleph, this is source 13, kach na et birchati, take my bracha. Now, where's that language from, Vayikach et birchati, that was Esav's accusation. And it sounds like at some level, Yaakov realized what he did was wrong, because now he's not just saying, look, I'm trying to appease you. He's trying to say, you know what? I did something wrong. Take my bracha. Right? At some level, he's trying to undo the wrong. Because I have everything I need. And he pressured him and he took it. And this sounds, in many ways, like the end of the bracha story. Because, if you think back to the bracha story, Yitzchak said to Esav, I don't have a bracha. Why? I gave him everything. And now Yaakov is telling him, take it, don't worry. I don't need it because I have everything, I want to give you my bracha. At some level, he seems to be, not just trying to bribe Esav, but trying to say, I get it. I get that what I did was wrong, that I got everything. Why don't you take my bracha? Take this as part of the bracha. I'm giving you wealth. And that was part of my bracha here. Take it. So it sounds like at some level that Yaakov himself realized that there was a problem. Now, we noted last week that there are other reasons to think that something was wrong in this story. And we noted last week that this story stands out as the only time, or at least the first time in Bereishis, where a human being chooses who gets to be the chosen one. In the Adam story, it's not the firstborn, but the choice is made by God. He chooses Hevel over Cain. In the Avram story, it's Yitzchak, but Avram goes out of his way to not make that choice. God makes the choice and says, listen to Sarah, she's right. But Avram isn't willing to do it himself. Noach is chosen, so to speak. But that choice is again made by God. The first time we have where the choice is made by a human being, where you see a human being interfering, is this story. So the story also stands out in that way. And one of the ways of reading that we noted last week is that it may be that that's a veiled critique of Rivka, that she was, she didn't have that aspect of Avram, the ability to, submit to God, She has to do it her way. She has to push forward. And already that might raise some red flags. A way of sort of bringing this out, and this Rabbi Waxman, Chanoch Waxman, notes this in his article on this topic, is that one of the ways of thinking about it is we have to think what role this story is playing in the Sefer Bereishis. And he notes that there are really two parallel themes that happen in all of Sefer Bereishis. There's the chosenness theme. Right? Part of the book is about chosenness. Right? It's about how did we get to the Jewish people. Right? We start with Adam, Hevel is chosen, he gets killed, so now we have another child, Chase is killed, and Noach is chosen, and then amongst him, he curses one son, and Shem is the most chosen, and then Avram is chosen among his brothers, and then Yitzchak is chosen among his brothers, and then Yaakov is chosen amongst his brothers, and then Yosef is the chosen one. That's a little bit problematic. So in the end, all the brothers get chosen at some level. Yehuda is the leader, and Yosef's the leader, and then eventually we get to the Jewish people. One story that runs through all of Bereishis is the story of chosenness, right? And if we think of the Yitzchak, Yaakov, Bracha story as a chosenness story, then we're more likely to think that what happened was that Yitzchak was wrong and that Yaakov was right, right? The Torah is just telling you, how did everybody get chosen? So, Hevel got chosen this way, and Avram got chosen this way, and Yitzchak got chosen this way. Oh, and by the way, this is how Yaakov got chosen. Right? And if we think that this story is part of that framework of the chosenness stories, so then we have no particular reason to think that what Yitzchak did, that what Yaakov did was wrong. But there's another story in Bereishis, which is the story of reward and punishment. And there's the consequences of Cain's sins. Right? Cain's sins, well, Adam's sins, we learn the consequences. Cain's sins, we learn the consequences. The Dora Mabel sins, we learn the consequences. The Dora Pelaga sins, we learn the consequences. Yishmael sins, and we learn the consequences. Right? Everybody has a sin moment, and we learn the consequences. The other message that goes through all of Sefer Bereishis is that there are consequences for sin. Now, if what we read before is the right way of reading the Lavan story, right, then it sounds like the Torah is trying to frame the Bracha story not primarily in the chosenness narrative, but in the reward and punishment narrative. Because the stories that follow the Bracha story are Yaakov having to flee and getting tricked by Lavan. And then, and this why this acts as sort of the beginning of the rest of the stories, this doesn't seem to be the end of it, because there's more chosenness problems and trickery that happens to Yaakov that if we're looking for reward and punishment, we'll find, such as, right, Yosef, which is, right, he chose Yosef, so what do the brothers do? Deceive him, and they say, right, HaKernak, Donet Ben Chai, right, is this your sons? Right? They trick him out of his chosenness. Right? And if you think that this is part of the reward-punishment narratives, then it's easy to understand why Vayishlach and right and the following parshios follow the parsha of the brachos, because this was the punishment for what Yaakov did. So, right? So at some level, whether we take, possibility one, that Yitzchak was really, wrong, and Rivka and Yaakov were correct, or are Yaakov and Rivka wrong, it depends on which narrative you think it's primarily belonging to. It has both elements. Right? It is the story of how Yaakov gets chosen, but it's also the story, maybe the beginning of the story, of why Yaakov is such a bad life. Right? So which one do you emphasize? If you think the Torah is trying to emphasize number two, right, that this is part of the reward-punishment narratives, so then you're more likely to think that he made a mistake. So possibility two is that maybe it's true. Right? We have the opening nevuah that Yaakov is supposed to be the chosen one, but that no, they did something wrong. They shouldn't have deceived Yitzchak in this way. And right, the reason I say that this story sort of opens up the rest of Bereishis is because right now, right, as we continue Bereishis, the question is, what is it? Right, how is it functioning? Right, what is the purpose of it? If this read is right, then the purpose of the following stories are to explain how Yaakov gets punished, or if the way we suggested the Kachnat Berchati is supposed to be as correct, how Yaakov begins to do tshuva. Right, right? If you think that's the point of this story, then it frames the rest of Bereishis as a reward-punishment story or a reward-punishment tshuva story. Right? If you think it's about chosenness, right, then this story, right, is just another story amongst others, and now we just have to continue with the chosenness narratives. So that's possibility two. Possibility three is that neither of these are right, that Rivka and Yaakov were wrong to deceive Yitzchak, but not because Yitzchak had made a mistake and they just went about it in the wrong way, but maybe Yitzchak never made a mistake. Or maybe Yitzchak never meant to bless Esav in the first place. And there's evidence for this as well. The Midrash in 16 seems to take this direction. We saw it last week. I just copied it onto these sources again. It says, "Vayehav Yitzchak et Esav." The Midrash said that Yitzchak loved Esav. V'chilo haya avinu Yitzchak yodeh b'maseh Esav shehen ki'urin. Did Yitzchak not know that Esav was a sinner? V'akatuv omer alo misanech Hashem esna. And we know that you have to hate those who hate God. U'mipnei ma'avo. So why did he love him so much? Ella ohavo bifanav, he loved him in front of him, bilvad, only in front of him, kedei lekarvo lamashcho, to bring him close. Sherei kal vachomer, because he said, im kshu ohavo masav mikul kol, if he sins even when I love him, ilu sinei over richakol achad vekama vekama, if I hate him, how much more so am I going to drive him away? Va'amru rabotenu lo lamti yamin mikarev et usmoldo, heh? And the rabbis say you should always pull someone close with the right, even if you're pushing them away with the left. Right? So we saw this midrash last week, which seems to imply that Yitzchak never wanted to bless him. But right, the problem with the midrash at first glance is right that he did. Right, he did want a bracha, to give him a bracha, or did he? Right. So, so let's look. Right? At the psukim. Right? So if we look at the psukim, we'll do this backwards. Right? It sounds like, right, the bracha that Yaakov gets at first was intended by Yitzchak for Esav. But does Yitzchak give Yaakov his own bracha? Yes, right? When he flees. Right? When it's time to send him away, he gives him his own bracha. Right? If you look at the end of this is in Perek Chavcher. It's the end of Parshas Toldos. After he's told him he's going to leave, so this is the beginning of Perek Chavcher, right? Vayikra Yitzchak al Yaakov Yevarech Oto. And so now he calls him and seems to give him his own bracha, right? Because now he's sending him away, and now he's not giving him the bracha he was tricked into. This is the bracha he's giving him of his own volition. So if you want to look at the chart, right? I copy the first four psukim. Vayikra Yitzchak al Yaakov, vayivarech oto, vayitzaveyu, vayomer lo, lo tikach isha bibnot Kenan. He said, don't take wives from the Canaanite women. Kum lech paden aram, beita betuel avi imecha, go to your mother's family's house, v'kach lacham isham, isha bibnot lavan achi imecha, and then take a wife from there. And now he gives him the bracha that it seems like is intended just for Yaakov. This is no mistake, right? This is not the bracha meant for Esav. This is Yaakov's bracha. V'kel shakai yivarech otcha, right? God, with the name of Kel Shakai, will bless you. V'yifrecha v'yarbecha, and he will make you fruitful. V'yitel lekal amim, and you will be a great nation. V'yiten lecha et birkat Avraham, and he'll give you Avram's bracha. Lecha uzaracha itach, for you and your children, lirishtecha eretz migurecha, to conquer this land, asher nata elokim l'Avraham. Right? So he tells him that he's giving him the bracha of Avram. And now look at the language. And on the left side is the bracha of Avram. Vayi Avraham ben tishim shana v'teisha shanim vayira Hashem el Avram vayom ra'il Avram. So now, when he's 99, he gets his bracha, and he says, how does he introduce himself? Ani Kel Shakai, I am, again, that name, Kel Shakai, Hitalech Lefanai Ve'etamim, right, be perfect, Ve'etna Briti Ve'enu Ve'enech, and I will have a covenant between you and your children, V'arbeot Chavimot Mo'od, and make you great, V'yipol Avram Alpanavi Da'Brito Elokim Le'mor, so Avram falls on his face, and he says, Ani Ne Briti Itach, V'yitel Avam Mongoyim, you will be Avam Mongoyim, you will be the father of many nations, V'lo Yikarei Od, Et Shimcha Avram, and you won't be Avram, Vayash Shimcha Avraham, ki Av Hamon Goyim Netaticha. And now the actual bracha. Now look at the bolded parts on the two sides. V'hifreiti otcha b'me'od me'od. And those same words. V'hifreiti. U'netaticha l'goyim. U'melachem imimcha. Yitzeyu. V'akimoti et briti. B'ni v'inecho v'in zaracha. Charecha l'dorotam l'rvid olam. V'hiot l'cha l'elokim l'zaracha charecha. V'netati l'cha u'zaracha charecha. Et eretz migurecha. Et kol eretz kinan l'chuzat olam. V'yiti l'hem l'elokim. Right? So if you look at the language, it's not just that Yitzchak gives him the bracha of Avraham. Literally, the words are the words of the bracha of Avraham. But now let's look back at the bracha story, right? At the bracha that he was supposedly the chosen, this bracha that he was giving to Esav that Yaakov stole. Right? So, Pasuk, this is Perek Chav Zayin, Pasuk Chav Chet. And you can look at the chart and see how similar or how different it is from the bracha of Avram. And he says, first of all, the name is Nakel Shakai. And now the bracha has literally nothing to do with Avram's bracha. I will give you dew, and I will give you a fatty land, I'll give you grain. You'll have power. You'll rule over your brother. And your mother's children will bow you. That is from Avram's bracha. And that's it. Right? If you look at the brachas, the bracha intended for Yaakov sounds a lot more like the bracha of Avram, i.e. the chosenness bracha, than the bracha that he intended for Esav. So some claim, right, that it's not that Yitzchak made a mistake. It's not even that, you know, Yitzchak, was wrong and Rivka and Yaakov had to, you know, trick him, but they did it wrong. They totally misunderstood what was going on. Yitzchak never meant to give a bracha, give the chosenness bracha to Esav. He wanted to give him a bracha because he loved him. He was his son. He wanted to give him wealth and power. But he understood who Esav was. He wasn't making him the chosen son. He wasn't going to be the heir to Avram's legacy. That was always supposed to be Yaakov. And so the reason that Rivka and Yaakov are wrong is not just because they went about it the wrong way. It's because it was totally unnecessary. If they had just communicated with Yitzchak, they would have realized that it wasn't meant to be this way, right? Really, Yaakov was going to get the bracha the whole time. And, right, then what we would say is that, right, it was a bigger mistake. It wasn't just that they got it in the wrong way. It's that Yitzchak's plan was that Yaakov and Esav would both have a role, and because of this whole situation which drove Esav away, Yaakov had to be the only chosen one, and that's part of why he gets punished. And there is a midrash I should have put, I forgot to put it, where the midrash says, Ra'ui haya Rivka latzeit mimena shtei mesrei shvatim. Right, Rivka was worthy to have the 12 shvatim come from her. And then it goes on, right? Which implies what? That at some level, there wasn't supposed to be another chosenness story. Right? This whole thing was a mistake. Right? Yitzchak was going to choose both of his sons. Yaakov and Rivka sort of manipulated the situation, which in the end pushed Esav away such that he couldn't be part of the chosenness story, but that didn't have to be that way. And it was because of the deception that in fact Yaakov ended up being the only chosen one. He was always supposed to be the primary one because he was the tzaddik, but Esav was supposed to have a role. And because of this story, he got driven out of the story improperly. So that's possibility three. Now, possibility, this is not really possibility four, but this is another aspect to it, is the possibility that there really was a shift, right? So far we've assumed, based on the opening psukim, that Yaakov was always supposed to be the chosen one, right? Either Yitzchak didn't understand that, or Yitzchak did understand that, but wanted Esav to have a role. But there are some who think that no, really, Esav was supposed to be the Bechor. He really was supposed to be the Bechor, but he sinned. Right? That opening Nevuah isn't, you know, saying that Yaakov is supposed to be the chosen one, per se. Right? It might be predicting what's going to happen, but it wasn't determining that Esav couldn't have been the Bechor. He really could have been the Bechor. But he sinned. Right? So Rabbi Yoel Ben-Nun takes this argument. And he tries to explain why it is that this was the case. So he has this, it's a very long article, it's like a 50-page article. But he makes, I'll just, you know, the very, very basics of it. He makes the claim as follows. He says that Yitzchak, uniquely among the Avot, what is his profession? So he's a farmer, right? He moves to Gerar. He's the first and only of the Avot to farm. And Avram, what do we know about him? He has merchandise, and he has animals, and he's traveling, which is the lifestyle of a merchant. Yaakov, we know, is a, and his children are all shepherds. They're all shepherds and businessmen, right? They are merchants of sorts. Yitzchak is the only person who, we know, plants. He goes to Gerar and he plants, right? And he gets the bracha, Masha, Rim, but he's the only person that we know of who is at all attached to the land. Now, what does a farmer need, right, or a real estate owner need in a very dangerous, enemy-infested land? He needs
weapons.
He needs someone who can fight for him, right? Avram, when he, right, when there's a famine, he can pick up and leave. When there's danger, what does he do, right? When he's in Gerar and there's, right, starts to be a fight between him and Avimelech, he picks up and leaves. Because if you're a merchant, okay, so it's not worth settling here, so I'll just leave. Like, well, Yaakov is constantly leaving. He goes to Shechem, oh, they're going to hate me, picks up, goes to the next city, right? Oh, this isn't working, we need food, goes to Mitzrayim. Yitzchak doesn't move, right? Yitzchak, I mean, he does go to Beersheba, but he's much more stable. He's sitting in the land. But we know that he's having fights with Avimelech, right? He's constantly in these arguments. Eventually, he wins. So Rabbi Yoel Ben-Nun has this interesting theory that Esav was supposed to be the Bechor, at least the Bechor in Yitzchak's mind, because Yitzchak, being the Av, who moved from being a businessman to beginning the settlement of the land of Israel, needed a warrior. So he takes it all the way to the extreme, that Esav was supposed to be the Bechor. But you could have made the same claim for what I put here in possibility three, which was maybe that's why Yaakov needed both of them. The reason that Esav was part of the story was even if he wasn't the chosen one, right? If you're living in the land, you need both of them at some level, right? You need the tzaddik, but you also need the person who can go out and fight, right? And in fact, this is what we know about Esav, right? This week's parsha, we know that Esav is fully capable of building an entire militia. That would be very helpful if you wanted to establish your presence in the land. So he takes it all the way to the extreme and says that really Esav was supposed to be the Bechor, but he sinned. And therefore everything was turned on its head. Right? You could have made a more sort of, a little bit less extreme claim, was that no, because Yitzchak was what needed a warrior, that was why he was trying so hard to keep both Yaakov and Esav in the mix. Now, Yoni Grossman takes Rabbi Yoel Ben-Nun's theory even farther. And he notes, and we don't have time to go through all the evidence, but he notes that, like we did a few weeks ago, that Rivka seems to be made into the new Avram, right? Yaakov also does, but it's even more contrived, right? Because Yaakov is in Israel, is in Yitzchak's house, and they send him out to Haran to relive the process, right? He has to go through that process, come back to Israel, and he notes that it's, if you actually follow the geography, the Pesukim actually emphasize that Yaakov comes into the land the same way Avram did and visits the same three places on his way into the land. Right? Yaakov, like, Rivka, it's one thing to say we look for someone who's willing to be Avram. Yaakov is in the Holy Land, is in the chosen family, and we still make him go through this process again. So one way of reading that would be simply, as we suggested last week, is that each generation needs an Avram-like figure. Right, so Avram has Avram, the Yitzchak Rivka has Rivka. Now, in Yaakov's life, right, he's already in Israel, so you know, either you could have had, you know, Rachel and Leah or whoever fill that role, or he has to do it. Right? There always needs to be that person willing to, you know, go out, settle in Haran, right, turn against that culture and come back. But Yoni Grossman goes farther and says, you know what? No, if Rabbi Yoel ben Nun is right, that Esav was supposed to be the Bechor, and then Esav sinned, and the whole story was turned on his head, then the reason Yaakov needs to go through the Avram thing is not because you need an Avram in every generation, but because Yaakov had to relive the story because the chosen had been broken. That Yitzchak, right, his heir was supposed to be Esav, it was meant to be Esav, and the Bracha story is not the end of the chosenness. It was the beginning, is that because he sinned, so there had to be this subterfuge. Yaakov had to take it, but he really didn't deserve it. So to deserve it, he had to go back and start again. Right? He had to go back to square one. And the reason the Pesukim are telling you this is not just because he had to be Avram-like, he actually had to be Avram. We had to start all over again because God's plan, so to speak, had been broken, so we had to reverse the clock. And Yaakov is not just the Avram of his generation, he's Avram again in its entirety. So, right, all the different ways we've seen of taking the story, now you see why this story in many ways opens up the rest of Sefer Bereishis, because depending on how you read the story will affect very much how you think about the subsequent story. So the first possibility, like I said, is that, you know, really the plan from day one was that Yaakov was the chosen one, bunch of innocent mistakes. God, for some reason, wanted a little bit of subterfuge. But really, Yitzchak was wrong. Yaakov and Rivka were right. Now, of course, we would still have to answer the question, why did it have to be through this subterfuge? And some people suggest, and you know, we may come back to it, that this is related to the point I just made, that Yitzchak, in order to be a right agricultural nation to dwell, you can't just be the Ishtam Yosheva Alim. You need to be able to get your hands dirty. Right? Some people suggest that the reason it had to be this way is because Yaakov had to learn how to be deceitful. He had to learn how to do things that don't look great. Sometimes that's what it means to be a leader. Right? And that's how they understand the ensuing stories, right? That he was right, and the reason he had to go through the Lavan was not as a punishment, was as a training ground, right? So that's possibility one. Possibility two is that, yes, Yaakov is supposed to be the chosen one, and yes, Yitzchak is making a mistake, but still, it shouldn't have been done with this trickery, and this story is very much part of the reward-punishment narrative, and in many ways, the reason he gets punished with Lavan, and he gets punished with Yosef, is because he went about this the wrong way. The third possibility is that really Yitzchak never made a mistake. Yitzchak always meant that Yaakov should be the chosen one. So it was a very, very big misunderstanding of the situation for Rivka and Yaakov to distance Esav, because there was that potential that Esav would be part of it, you know, as the military might, as the political leader. Whatever exactly his role was going to be, he was meant to be a secondary person, and Yitzchak never meant otherwise, and because of this subterfuge, he was driven away. That's possibility three. And then the fourth issue we raised is the possibility that maybe, no, Esav really was supposed to be the chosen one. He sinned, and the reason that this process has to be so painful, and Yaakov has to go through all he's going through, is because we actually have to restart the clock and make Yaakov be Avram, because God's plan was flipped on its head. So those are sort of four different approaches to the Bracha story. And like I said, this, in you know, the next, whatever story we take from now on, right, is going to, right, how we understand this story is going to affect how we view the trajectory of Yaakov's life, right? What story is it continuing? Depends on what story you think happened here.